Wednesday, December 8, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you and your family and your friends are all getting ready for this holiday season that is, by the way, like right on top of us. Like it has come so quickly. Hope everyone in your world is getting ready. Hope your week is off to a good start. We are happy to have you here with us today. And you know, I gotta be real honest with you. We have so much to get to today on The Dose. We need to just jump right in. I don't have time for all the small talk and pleasantries. We have a lot to get to today on The Dose. Of course, the biggest news of the week in sports is that the college football playoff is now set. They released that on Sunday. We're going to be talking a little bit more about it in just a few minutes. But if you haven't heard, maybe you haven't been paying attention, maybe you weren't watching, the Alabama Crimson Tide got the number one overall seed after they won the SEC championship over Georgia on Saturday, who had been number one for most of the season. Michigan blew out Iowa in the Big Ten championship, and now Jim Harbaugh, a guy that has taken no shortage of grief over the past few seasons at Michigan, is going to the college football playoff as the number two seed. Wow. Ohio State fans have to be out on the ledge right now. The Georgia Bulldogs did take a big loss in that SEC championship game, but I mean, they had been the number one team all year. That was their very first loss, so they got the number three seed, and then the Cincinnati Bearcats will get the number four seed, becoming the first non-Power 5 conference team to ever make this playoff. You know, I personally, I don't have a big problem with what the selection committee did here. I know there are some people that complained about what the selection committee did. I heard some people, some talking hairdos out on some of the big networks saying how, well, they messed this up. They should have did this. They should have did that. I didn't have a huge problem with it. I know there are some that said Michigan should have been the number one seed overall. I wouldn't have had a huge problem with that. But let's be real clear. Alabama did play a tougher schedule. There are also those that say Georgia should not have made the playoff, period. But I mean, they had one loss, just like everyone else you'd be wanting to put in. And some of those teams, people were talking about, had two losses. So I'm okay with Georgia getting in. I mean, they did look like the strongest team for most of the year. And they had beaten four ranked teams. Hey, I still think Georgia is actually very dangerous in this thing. And then there were those that say the Cincinnati Bearcats, one, either shouldn't have been there, or two, should have been higher than the number four seed. And again, I understand. But I mean, Cincinnati did go undefeated. So I think they can go there. We saw them go into Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame in South Bend. So we saw that they beat some good competition. But then when we look at their strength of schedule, I mean, think about this strength of schedule. Alabama is ranked number one in strength of schedule. Georgia is ranked number two. Michigan is ranked number four. And then Cincinnati is ranked number 48. So, hey, I don't have a complaint with them going in at number four. I'm just glad they got in at all. You might remember, I thought Cincinnati should have got in last year ahead of Notre Dame. This year they did, so I'll be happy. But now, there's no more complaining. Like, no more complaining going forward. Each of these four teams now controls their own destiny. Go out and win, take care of business on the field, and you can go as far as you want to go. So now, here is what we will have. On New Year's Eve, we will get number one Alabama versus number four Cincinnati in the Cotton Bowl. And I know there are going to be a number of people saying Cincinnati cannot compete in that game. And I won't pretend it won't be difficult. It will. But that Cincinnati defense, they are good everywhere. They might match up with Alabama better than some people might think that they would. Then, that same evening, New Year's Eve, we will have number two Michigan squaring off against number three Georgia in the Orange Bowl. And this has a chance to be a great one. I know usually when we think that, we end up getting a blowout. We'll see. But I mean, both teams have one loss. Both teams are very, very good up front. Both teams have coaches with a lot to prove in this game. I can't wait for both the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl. And then the winners of those two games will meet in the College Football National Championship on Monday, January 10th. And again, after we have had such a wild year in college football, do we really have any idea what's going to happen here? No, there's no way, because nothing this year in college football has gone according to plan. This college football season has been absolutely wild. Now, while the play on the field has been wild and completely unpredictable, we have seen surprises all year, including, I might add, who is being invited to the Heisman Award presentation this coming Saturday. Because remember, before college football began, and we were saying, well, who's going to be up for the Heisman Award? And we were all saying, well, let's see, it'll be like Oklahoma's Spencer Rattler, North Carolina's Sam Howell, Clemson's DJ Uiagalelei, and maybe Alabama's Bryce Young. That sounds like a good four to put out there. Well, out of those four, the only one to actually make it is Alabama's Bryce Young. He was invited to the ceremony this Saturday, but instead of those other three guys, here is who else got the invite. We will have Michigan defensive end Aiden Hutchinson. We will get Pittsburgh quarterback Kenny Pickett. And we will get Ohio State quarterback CJ Stroud. Yeah, that's just like we all drew it up, isn't it? Now, I still think Bryce Young gets the win of the Heisman on Saturday. But, I mean, I could totally see Hutchinson getting a few sympathy votes. Never forget this. Heisman voters still love to vote for the best quarterback on the top-ranked team in the country. For that reason, I think Bryce Young is going to be named the Heisman Award winner on Saturday. Finally, we do have one final story to touch on real quick before we jump into what we have in store for you this week on The Dose. And right now, we're going to talk about a sport that we don't talk all that much here at The Dose. But we have to talk a little bit about the world of horse racing, where once again it seems that another horse has sadly passed away this week. Aww. Yes, Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit collapsed and died after a workout on Monday at, where else? Santa Anita Racetrack in California. What in the world is going on with that track? The three-year-old colt, trained by Bob Baffert, had just completed 5 furlongs in his second workout since finishing second in the Breeders' Cup Classic just a month ago at Del Mar. And Bob Baffert said in a statement that the horse apparently suffered a heart attack and passed away on Monday. Yeah, I'm sure this has nothing to do with Bob Baffert injecting this poor horse with God only knows what. Remember last year at the Kentucky Derby? Remember when Bob Baffert got suspended because Medina Spirit actually tested positive after the Kentucky Derby for some sort of banned substance? Remember that? And it was Baffert's record 7th win in the Derby. And after the failed test, Baffert was suspended by Churchill Downs. He was barred from entering horses there and also at the Kentucky Derby. And Baffert just said the whole time, I'm innocent. I'm innocent. I'm innocent. I didn't do this. I wasn't doing anything. I don't know what happened. I don't know how that horse got that strange substance in its system. It must have had like a tainted salt lick or something. Oh, a liar. Remember all that? And now, here we are. And you know, this really is a sad story. Because it turns out that injecting your horse with drugs, it's not actually just a creative way to win a few extra races. Because it might also make your horse's heart explode.
I've had it with this dump. We got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off.
And now, when we hear this story coming out at Santa Anita, doesn't it make us kind of rethink everything that's been going on at Santa Anita over the past few years? Because here we were kind of thinking, I don't know, there's something wrong with that track. I don't know if it's a situation where they don't have good clay or whatever at the track. Maybe they need to tear it down and start over. Something has been going on at Santa Anita over the past few years, but we were thinking it was something wrong with the track. Now I'm really starting to wonder if Santa Anita is just like a skid row full of horse junkies. Well done, horse racing. We will now all go back to not caring about you again. Well, until you probably kill another horse or until we have a triple crown threat. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, maybe tell us your favorite, I don't know, horse junkie of all time or whatever. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you need a little advice. Reach out to us. We would love to hear what you have to say. Also, be sure that you're stopping by dailydosesports.com at least once or twice a week and checking out some of the new articles that are going up there. I'm releasing a Daily Doses every Tuesday. It's a very quick read. I'll tell you ahead of time. Usually has a local slant, but it could be about anything. And then we have our featured columnist, Young Jimmy, who is posting a new article on Thursdays. It's last week. He talked a little bit about the Major League Baseball lockout. You need to make sure you're stopping by dailydosesports.com and checking out the new stuff going on over there. Plus, you can always find a link to the podcast. You can always find a link to the YouTube videos. You can always find a link to the gear that we have over there as well. Speaking of that gear, the holiday season is here. We know we're all still doing that online shopping, so be sure that you stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. Got a few designs over there for you to choose from. You can get a sweatshirt. You can get a hoodie. You can get a t-shirt for the people that are on your shopping list, and you can get it with a Daily Dose logo, and you can pick it in whatever color that you want. Be sure that you stop by tpublic.com and take care of that shopping that we all know that we need to do. Hey, today on the show, we actually have something extra special for you because we are going to be joined by a longtime friend of the show to discuss all things sports. Yes, Russ McKinstry coached basketball for years. He has worked in athletic administration for years. He absolutely knows sports. You know, I always love getting his thoughts on what is going on in the sports world because he just has such a unique perspective on everything that goes on. Keep one thing in mind, though. We actually recorded this conversation before the college football playoff was announced. You'll have to see what he predicts is going to happen. But hey, let's quit messing around. Let's get over to Coach Russ McKinstry right now. Joining us right now via the Daily Dose hotline, we are happy to have an old friend of the Dose, a guy that has spent decades coaching high school sports, winning state titles, sending athletes onto the college level to the professional level. Coach Russ McKinstry, it has been a while since we've been able to get together, but welcome back to the Daily Dose. How are you doing today?
Awesome, Coach Daly. Good morning to you. I hope all is well in the beautiful state of Colorado. And it's great to hear your voice, the golden voice of Aurora, Colorado.
Coach, we haven't been able to visit in a while because you have been really busy, but you've been busy with something a little different than usual. First off, where in the world are you at right now? Where are you calling us from?
Well, I'm calling you from beautiful Savannah, Georgia, Coach. As you know, I retired this past July, and Shelly and myself decided to move to a little bit warmer climate so I could play golf and go play on the beach and, you know, soak up the sun of Georgia, the coast of Georgia. So we're in football SEC territory where high school and college football is extremely important, and I like that too. So I miss Colorado, miss you guys, but if all goes as planned, we'll be visiting and being in Colorado quite a bit of the time too.
So what are you doing these last few months? You're retired. You just go into golf. Are you going to see sporting events? What is it that you're doing?
You know, we have been up and down the East Coast, going to professional football games. We went to Jacksonville to a game to watch the Broncos, actually. We went up to New York City and watched them play the Giants early in the football season. And then I've been spending a lot of weekends going to, you know, Athens, Georgia to watch the Bulldogs play. We went to back to Jacksonville to see Florida and Georgia play. We went to South Carolina to watch the Gamecocks play. So we've had a full menu, a full schedule of college football. Been watching quite a bit of high school football. Some really good high school football out here in Georgia. And now that basketball season has started, I'm starting to attend some of the high school basketball games and hope to make it some of the college basketball in the area too. So as usual, everything's built around athletics, Dells. And when I don't have something to go to, then I go play golf. So it's a pretty good life.
The Russ McKinstry Fantasy Camp, it sounds like a really, really good thing to go on. Coach, of all the places that you have been, different colleges, different stadiums, whatever, which place has been the most impressive that you've seen so far?
Oh, wow. You know, if you go all the way back from all of my travels, you know, I've been to a game at Notre Dame, and that was, you know, that was really special. But I'll tell you, just recently we went and watched the Bulldogs play up in Athens, and I can tell you that, you know, that was really special. I've way back in the day, going way back, I used to go to Cornhusker games in Lincoln. So, you know, I've been really fortunate and blessed to see a lot of great venues, great facilities, and great college football teams. But I would put University of Georgia right up there with some of the best environments that I've been lucky enough to go and be a part of. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Really special.
Okay, I have to go to the other side, though. Where's the place that you went to and you were like, really, this is it? Like, where was the place that you were impressed with that you were expecting more of?
You know, I went to Jacksonville, and I wasn't disappointed in the venue per se at all. It's a nice, solid stadium, you know, easy to get to, nice sight lines. Everything's really first class. But I have to tell you, the vibe around the people and professional sports here in Georgia and, you know, the northeast part of Florida, you know, it's just not built around professional football. Nothing like what you have with Bronco Mania and Bronco Country. So, you know, you go and it's, I guess you might equate it to something maybe like a laid back San Diego Padres crowd, you know, where they're there, or maybe even the Colorado Rockies. Let's just be honest.
Sure.
You know, they're there to socialize and drink beer and, you know, party and have a good time. But it's really not about the football game or their passion for the game. So, you know, that was a little bit different. I enjoyed watching Trevor Lawrence play. You know, I've always really liked him. But the whole passion around their professional football team for the Jaguars just was non-existent. There were more Bronco fans there. And the Bronco fans were cheering twice as loud. So it was just, you know, probably like it is when Denver goes to San Diego and plays the Chargers, you know, where the Broncos fill the stadium up. It was kind of like that atmosphere. So that was kind of disappointing, but beautiful football facilities, stadiums out here, beautiful campuses. And obviously seeing for the first time, it's been pretty exciting. And the University of Georgia is just really in a beautiful setting. Athens is really pretty and the campus is spectacular. So I had a lot of fun. I would say the majority of the time I've been very surprised by how nice and beautiful everything is out here.
Coach, speaking of college football, speaking of those Georgia Bulldogs, we saw a wild weekend in college football. It was championship week, and now it is really, really coming down to it. Who, you know, is going to make the college football playoff? And at this point, honestly, we shouldn't even be surprised because that's just how the season's gone. So many wild upsets and just crazy games. We'll run through these real quick. Number one, Georgia was upset by number three, Alabama in the SEC championship, 41-24 in a game that honestly at times didn't even feel that close. Number two, Michigan crushed number 13, Iowa in the Big Ten championship, 42-3. Number four, Cincinnati beat number 21, Houston, 35-20 in the AAC championship. And number five, Oklahoma State was upset by number nine, Baylor, 21-16 in the Big 12 championship. Now, of course, Notre Dame was number six. They didn't play. Ohio State was number seven. They didn't play. Coach, if you were on that selection committee, who would you be sending to the college football playoff?
Well, I thought about that. I know you've thought about that too. You know, I would, my top four would be in the order of number one, Alabama. I would put Georgia two. I'd put Michigan two. I'd put Georgia three. I thought Michigan looked pretty good again against Iowa late last night. And then Cincinnati, still, the strength of schedule, Cincinnati's a concern, but I think you have to include them over the Baylors, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame's, whoever else, Oklahoma's those other next tier of contenders for the top four. I definitely think you got to reward Cincinnati and make them the first non-Power Five team to make it. And let's see what they can do. And if they don't show up and it's an embarrassment, then I think that sets a precedent. And if they do show up and are very competitive, then I think that's really good for similar colleges that have been in the same situation who haven't had the chance. So I think this is the time to try it. And I think all of us probably are hoping or would like to see an Alabama-Georgia rematch for the national championship. But, let's see what Michigan and Cincinnati bring to the table.
I like that top four. I like the direction that you went with that. And I like putting Cincinnati back at four, but I do think they should get in based on what they've done this year. And they haven't gotten a ton of style points, but hey, they went into Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame. That's something. And like you said, let's see what they have. Put them in and let them, face off against a big dog, and let's play this off and see how this goes. Coach, how are you feeling as far as expanding? There's talk they could expand out to 12, maybe even 16. I kind of feel like 8 would be maybe a little bit better, but how do you feel about that college football expansion they're talking about?
I'm definitely in favor of it. And I know we've talked about it on past episodes of your podcast, Coach. I'm like, I'd settle in at 8. I think just a traditional eight team bracket would be perfect. I think it would bring in enough competitive teams without watering it down and getting some real stinker football games that could happen if you're 12 or 16 and played that out. So, yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world to go with 8. And I really do hope they expand. I don't think 4 does the system justice, especially now. Everything's really changed so much with the transfer portal being basically wide open that, it's just like college basketball is. Parity is going to be more and more the likely scenario, maybe with the exception of Alabama and how they have it rolling. But after that, I think there's just going to be a whole lot of parity because of the transfers that will take place and continue to take place. And I know once COVID's over, maybe some of that will settle down. But, COVID and how we're handling it might be around for another year or two, the way it's going right now. So I would hope that they go to 8 and play out, just straight 1 through 8 bracket, 1 versus 8. And that's a quarterfinal game. And then you start paring down from there and include the traditional bowls in that process. And you could keep that as far as your marketing scheme, which I know is important. But golly, these colleges are making so much money, obviously, by the amount they're paying their coaches. Yeah. They're not hurting for money. Let's go ahead and expand 8 and let it play out.
Coach, I've got to ask you about this because we are seeing in college football this year these unprecedented coaching changes. Brian Kelly leaves Notre Dame for LSU. Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma for USC, and now it sounds like Clemson defensive coordinator Brent Venables is going to take that job at Oklahoma. But we're seeing all this change. When I look at Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame for LSU, I am guessing a couple of things. I'm guessing one, that he has to be saying, hey, Les Miles and Ed Orgeron won titles there. I can certainly do that. But two, I'm guessing that he's looking and saying, hey, I have more control over what kids I can get, what kids I can recruit. Is that the reason that you would think his change would be to go from a place like Notre Dame to an LSU?
Yeah, I really do. I think besides the obvious, and that's money. And the money in college coaching right now, really, if you think about it, it's almost sickening and a little bit depressing that we've reached the point in collegiate athletics where we're paying $100 million contracts to coaches. I mean, whoever would have thought that would have happened?
Sure.
Not me. 20, 30 years ago, I thought, you guys, you lost your mind if you're talking about that. But that's where we're at. And my perspective obviously has been enlightened, maybe changed a little bit since I've moved out here to Georgia and followed high school football in Florida, Panhandle, Florida, here in Georgia, and even into South Carolina. The amount of, talent, the priority they put on football. I mean, these kids start talking about recruiting and getting prepared for college when they're in middle school. And they're serious. They're not just pipe dreams. These are kids that are you know, they're totally focused on getting college scholarships. And that's not what you see. I mean, we've got decent talent in Colorado, as you know, and we send a few here and there around the country, and they're very successful. But it's nothing compared to the culture that has been built out here at SEC territory. So, you know, if I was a coach and think, okay, where can I maximize my talents as a coach and match it up with talent and the culture of taking football dead serious and maybe too serious, that's another topic of conversation at some point maybe we could have. But I think it makes total sense to me why they could even come to the southern part of the United States, Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, Florida, because football is so dynamic and so important to these people. You know, we out here, you never hear a word about the Atlanta Falcons or the Carolina Panthers or the Jaguars, and they're all within 3 hours of us. It is total college and high school focused, and occasionally they'll think about the professional side of it, but it's a really big business out here.
Okay, coming back, I want to get Coach Mack's thoughts on some of the coaching moves that we have seen lately in college football. Why would Brian Kelly leave Notre Dame? Why would Lincoln Riley leave Oklahoma for a Pac-12 school, no less? Plus, we are going to talk some NFL, we're going to talk some NBA, we're going to even talk some Major League Baseball. We still have a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose.
Coach, when you see Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma, a place that you think of, hey, that's a college football power, and he goes out to Southern California, my feeling is I'm going to take a little bit of an easier path. We know LA and California, there's a ton of recruiting potential out there that could be ramped up and turned into a monster, but it's also a way easier path to go to the Pac-12 instead of having to play in that SEC, which Oklahoma is going to join. It just seems to me like he was looking at it going, I can go out to the Pac-12 and win like now, or I can be down in the SEC and I can have to battle for it every single year. Is it the path of least resistance there?
No, that's a great point, Coach. I think you're right on. And I think it's a pretty strategic, well thought out move by Riley. You know, you look at the past glory years of USC and, you know, and how starved they are for someone to come in and rejuvenate that program. And you know, Oklahoma is always going to play, and that's a big-time program, obviously. But they're going to play second fiddle to Clemson, Georgia, Florida, and some of these other schools that just have, you know, more money, more resources, a little bit better talent to pick from. Potentially. So Oklahoma's a great job, but no, I think it's a really good move for him. And I think USC pulled off a huge coup by getting him to come to, you know, Los Angeles to coach that university.
Coach, I got to ask you about this because you've dealt with this being in coaching for most of your life. You have dealt with this, but right now we are seeing, especially with those two specifically, Brian Kelly leaving, Lincoln Riley leaving, we are seeing hard feelings from the programs that they left. We are seeing people mad at them and people upset that they left. Coach, it's weird. It might be one of the only vocations in the world where people get hurt if you take a better opportunity. But this has nothing to do with like logic. This is all emotion. People get mad and say, how dare you leave to do what's best for your family? Like, if you worked at the Quickie Mart and the 7-Eleven was giving you a better deal, you'd be like, I'm going to the 7-Eleven. No one would care. But in this, all logic goes out the window, doesn't it?
Oh, that's so funny. And I did my fair share of moving around Dells. And yeah, I mean, you have to be semi-selfish because sports is so emotional. People they want you to be loyal to the 100%. And they're very upset if you don't, if you don't stay where they choose to support their local team or school. And yeah, I mean, I felt that myself when Midnight Mel left Boulder, you know, because I'm a CU follower and I love them and want them to be back in national contention again at some point. Maybe never will happen, but I'd love to see it. But, you know, when he doubles his salary to go to Michigan State now, triples or more his salary. You know, if I take a step back, I can't be a hypocrite. And I would have done the same thing. even though I probably wouldn't have done it the same manner he did, you know, right. Some of the craziness that happened the last 48 hours of his tenure there. But yeah, I mean, you know, and when I was moving around, I'd move from one athletic director job up to another athletic director job. And I don't think people realize the main reason I did that was for the benefit of my family. I mean, I had two boys that, you know, I had to put through college and a wife that worked and maybe she was gaining professionally. So there's so many dynamics that go behind a move for a family and specifically financial gain and financial security plays a huge part in why these people do what they do. It's not just because they want their name to be, you know, in a more substantial position to glorify themselves. It really does, believe it or not, have to do a lot with their family and setting up their family for security.
Yeah. And I think we kind of forget that these people are, we only look at them through the lens of, hey, this is my favorite team, so they need to be all in on my favorite team, but they've got lives, they've got things they've got to take care of. And sometimes they look and they say, hey, this is a better situation. So they obviously take it. Coach, I want to jump over to the NFL this year, because the NFL, I know we keep being told, well, the NFL is down a little this year. The NFL isn't doing as good this year. The NFL does this wrong or that wrong. The NFL has been phenomenal this year. It's so good. I know parity is supposed to be bad, and I get it. But at the same time, any given Sunday, we don't know what's going to happen. The downside, I guess, to parity is I don't know that there's a team right now that I look at and say they are head and shoulders just better than everyone else. But there's about 7 or 8 teams that I look at and they say, well, if they're playing well at the right time, they might win the whole thing. Who are the teams you're looking at in the NFL this year and saying that they might be the team to get it done?
Yeah, you know, they're Goodell and NFL's dream of parity is so close to reality, because really, and I'm so glad I'm not a betting man, because if I was betting on the NFL, I mean, the heartburn, the stress, yep. the heart attack moments you would have trying to figure out who's going to win and who's going to cover point spreads and so forth. I would not want a part of that. I don't care how lucrative it is, but you know, there are so many good teams, no great teams. I think the Packers have a chance to be right there. The Cowboys, you know, I think, even though they're up and down, if they get healthy like they were this last game with, you know, Amari Cooper coming back and CeeDee Lamb and DeMarcus, their stud defensive end coming back.
Yeah.
You know, if they're fully loaded, they're good in the NFC. And obviously the team we never talk about that everybody overlooks is Arizona. You know, yes. And they are just rock solid. And, you know, if they're healthy, and I think that's where a lot of it is, no matter if you look at the AFC or the NFC, it's who can get the healthiest at the right time and get a few favorable breaks with who they draw in the playoffs. Then I think it just, you know, opens up the opportunity for somebody that is in a position where they're pretty strong. AFC, you know, wow. I like the Ravens, I like the Titans. The Chiefs, if they get right again, probably are better than anybody else if they ever get back to, you know, what they were a year ago or a year and a half ago, which is very possible if they get healthy and put things back together. So, but yeah, again, I could not clearly say, hey, this is the team that I think is going to do it. The Rams are right there, you know, and the Bengals seem to be emerging, but I'm not going to buy into them. You know, there's just a lot of that. I'm not ready to crown you until I see more from you and kind of see how the injury situation plays out.
Yeah, and you know, the team that I'm starting to feel sick about, but I'm starting to really get concerned about is God dang New England Patriots, who seem like they are just getting better every week, and he's got that defense playing so good. The offense isn't making mistakes. They're starting to scare me a little bit. I know that, you know, Tampa is the defending champs, right. and I could see them getting it together too. Coach, there's the number of teams that you threw out there, and I like the pick of Arizona, because that's the team we're sleeping on, and that's the team that has been playing without their quarterback now for like a month. Yeah. So if they get healthy, who knows? But one team we did not throw into that mix that we're going to have to talk about, and it's gonna make our day a little bit worse, because we know who isn't a contender, and that's our Denver Broncos, Coach. They're due for a new owner, And it sounds like they're going to be opening that up for a new owner in the spring going into the summer. As a result, though, it kind of feels like we are going to be in a little bit of a year of purgatory, because you can't really go out and hire a new head coach. You can't go make a big move and get a great quarterback. You can't revamp your coaching staff. You can't do all those things when we know a new owner is going to come in and he's going to want to do whatever they want to do anyways. So it kind of feels like we're just in a holding pattern, at least for a year. When you look at a new owner for the Broncos, though, I mean, what are we looking for? We're just looking for like another Pat Bowlen, a guy that's going to come in and run it like a top-notch company should be run?
You know, whatever happens, whether it's someone like Bezos or, you know, some of these, you know, extremely rich, multi-billionaire, very successful people, or if it's a group of people, I would just, you know, my secret dream and probably yours too, is that somehow they include Peyton Manning in the ownership group. And if that could be accomplished, that would make me feel a lot better about what's going to happen down the road. But I think you're right. I think, as you get older and I'm getting pretty old, I think you kind of figure out that everything balances out. And we had John Elway and Peyton Manning, two of the best, maybe two of the top five to ever play. And if you're going to have that much fun and that much success, you better know that the coin's going to flip on you sometime. Yeah. And you're going to go through a stretch of hell like we're going through right now. So I try not to get too emotional about it and hope that things turn around quickly. But I think you're right. I think that new ownership will be the start of the rejuvenation or the, you know, rebranding of the Denver Broncos for what we know they can be and what they should be and what, you know, the region of Colorado thinks they can be and should be. I think that's coming back, but I think you're right. I think we've got a few more hurdles to go through. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to be within the next 2 or 3 years, but, you know, maybe with new ownership, maybe within, you know, the next 5 to 7, this thing will be back where it should be and something we can be really proud of.
I hope so, because it's such a mess right now and it's tough to get too excited about anything they ever do. You see a couple, you know, small pieces, you see last year's draft class, you go, I kind of like where that went. And you see, you know, a piece here, there, some young kids coming up and, you know, that's kind of exciting. But at the end of the day, you know, this is all a big mess. And until the mess and the ownership level gets sorted out, I just don't think there's any direction that's going to be good. Speaking of Peyton Manning, I'm glad you brought up Peyton Manning. Coach, are you watching Peyton and Eli, that broadcast they're doing on Monday night when they do it? It is the greatest thing on TV. My only hope is that the networks don't step in and screw it up, because it is so much fun to watch those two.
Yeah, that's really been a great addition to options as far as watching sports and football. And yes, I've been watching. I probably watch 3/4 of what they do, and then I turn it over to the regular channel just to kind of see what the regular people are doing with Greasy and Lewis Riddick and that gang, Steve Levy and all them. But yeah, I mean, Peyton and Eli are really good together, and both are, you know, very intelligent. Obviously, Peyton is 100% football through and through. You can see that's all he thinks about, has thought about, and his intelligence and knowledge of football is off the charts. So yeah, it's just been a lot of fun. Plus, they're just really good human beings who have a sense of humor, and they do a great job with the guests that they bring on. So, what a great thing that they did. What a great idea.
Well, yeah, and it's so good. And like you said, their knowledge of football comes through where when you watch it, you're sitting there going, I'm learning things. Like, I'm picking things up that I wasn't even looking for. And then, you know, they bring on a guest or two. Who knew? This is going to sound bad. Who knew Condoleezza Rice knew football that went, like, she's smart about football. She knows her football. I know she does your politics. I was like, holy cow, she actually knows what she's talking about. Some really, really good stuff coming on that show. I hope they keep that going, because it's really, really fun.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy it. I look forward to it. Something I can look forward to every Monday night. It's don't miss TV for sure.
It definitely is. Coach, let's shift over to the National Basketball Association. And I know the season is kind of just getting going and it's just kind of getting rolling right now. It seems like we're seeing a lot of slow starts, though. Milwaukee started real slow. These are the defending champions. Los Angeles Lakers starting really well. Maybe they're not starting slow. Maybe they're just bad. I can't quite figure that out. There's a couple teams that look really, really good. Golden State looks red hot. Phoenix looks red hot. Brooklyn at times looks red hot. Can we just shorten this season down to about 50 games and stop having this long season? Because I feel like they'd be way more motivated to play if we weren't playing 82 games.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, really, the NBA season doesn't start until after the first of the year, after Christmas. You know, really starts, really honestly, you can say it starts Christmas Day. That's really when things start to change and you can start to figure out the dynamics. But this is just a glorified preseason. And, you know, you can't win an NBA conference or championship, but you can lose it. So you just kind of have to hold your ground. And then again, it's kind of like the NFL, and injuries have so much to do with who's going to, you know, end up in the finals. And, you know, you can really tell, though, that the COVID, the 18 months, 2 years, whatever it's been, almost 2 years of dealing with COVID, really took that league out of its rhythm. I think it's really created kind of a disjointed product right now. Even now, you still have tons of quarantines going on. The Nuggets are facing a lot of that right now, and many teams are. So it's just so disjointed because of COVID injuries and the length of the season. It's kind of like hockey. You really just kind of keep an eye on it. And then when it's about, you know, mid-February, you can start tuning in and really get a serious feel for what's going on.
Well, you're exactly right, because I'm looking at teams like Chicago and I'm going, they're okay, but are they really contenders? Well, right now they look like it, but I don't know how much to believe. I'm looking at Washington going, I don't know that I can really believe Washington, but they're playing really well right now. But like you said, the season is just so long. I'm just not sure that I can buy into it. I think it does look like those three teams, Brooklyn, Phoenix, Golden State, might be the big dogs, but I know there's going to be some other teams that kind of step up and get their game going. Coach, I got to switch real quick to Major League Baseball. The lockout is on. Nothing is happening. These two sides are on polar opposite ends of the spectrum. Let's just say baseball doesn't happen this year. How much are you going to miss baseball? Because I'm assuming down there you probably are seeing some games, maybe seeing the Braves and obviously what they did this year. How much would you miss baseball if it doesn't happen though?
I would have to be honest with you, Dells, and say I would hardly miss it at all. you know, and I like baseball, and
yeah, you really do way more than me.
Yes, exactly, and I know that, but I also know the game drastically needs to change how they operate and how they execute games, because in our culture now and the way we do things so quickly and spur of the moment and, you know, instant gratification type, you know, means of what we do, they need to really start to, you know, limit the amount of mound visits. They need to not let the batter step out of the batter's box. They need to, you know, just make some real subtle changes maybe that would speed up the game to reduce it by a half an hour and 45 minutes. And that would help. But then to have a work stoppage in the middle of how people feel about baseball, I mean, I think they're flirting with big time disaster. They better be careful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And what's interesting about that, Coach, we're two old guys here. The kids, if we're not watching it, we know full well the kids aren't, because like you said, it's too slow. It needs to be sped up. They need to sort some of these things out, because they are going down a path where baseball can go the way of boxing, where people just don't really watch it all that much. It's, maybe a big game here or there, but other than that, we really don't care. They need to be very, very careful. And this lockout might undo some of the good that they've had over the last year or two, where we're kind of like, oh yeah, baseball playoffs at least are pretty entertaining. That could all go out the window really, really fast. Okay, coming back, I want to get over to college basketball with Coach Mack. Which teams is he looking at as the true contenders in the country this year? What does he make of so many college basketball coaches stepping down and retiring? We will finish up our conversation with Russ McKinstry when we get back. Coach, I want to finish up with a sport that you and I both love, that you and I both follow, that we used to talk at length about. I want to talk about some college hoops, something that we both have a passion for. Coach, we know kind of who the big dogs are this year. Duke obviously is loaded. Gonzaga is going to be very, very good. Purdue with those twin towers is a problem. Baylor, UCLA, Villanova, I guess I would probably throw Kansas in there. They look like the big dogs to me. Any of those teams really stand out to you? Or are there any other teams out there that you're kind of watching and going, you might want to keep an eye on this team?
Oh, no, great question. And yeah, you know, I'm really starting to dive into my deep study of the college, teams and where I was at right now. I really, just this early in the season, and it is really early, I really like, I would have to say I like Purdue, I'd have to say I like Duke, and I like Baylor. I like those three teams right now. It would be my top three. I saw Alabama beat Gonzaga last night, watched that pretty closely, and that just kind of solidified my view on college basketball right now. There really is parity. And I think you could go maybe 20 to even 25 teams that could really actually win a national championship if certain things fall into place. I don't see a dominant team. Purdue is close. I mean, and Baylor, just because they know and understand now what it takes to win the championship, is right there. Duke, obviously, I think they have the intangible of Coach K's last year. So, you know, I think they're going to be really scary, because I think they want to send that guy out on a national championship, celebration. So Duke, Purdue, Villanova, Baylor are teams that I really like. But Villanova has chinks in their armor. Gonzaga definitely does. They're not nearly as good, I don't think, as they were last year. And
no,
the 7-foot Holmgren freshman looks like a freshman. You know, he's not coming in and dominating like they thought he was going to. And I think it's just a matter of strength and athleticism right now. I think he needs another year or two of filling out, you know, and getting his manhood, or whatever you want to call it, or his man strength and his man body starts to fully develop. He's just still a pup. So Kansas is scary. I like them, but you know how I feel about Bill Self. We've talked about that before. Not my favorite program. And Arizona looks like their new coach has got them playing well. And obviously UCLA is going to be right there. And they've got a lot of strengths coming back from last year's run. So, but wow, you know, and we mentioned this before we went on air. We talked about, some of the teams like Colorado State that, you know, are really, really good, and teams that probably can't win it all.
Right.
But boy, you don't want to see them in the first or second round. And
it
really, what it's setting up, like the bracket is going to be just chock full of excitement, because underdogs are going to be, you know, making serious runs through the bracket this year. So I think it's going to be a great season.
Coach, you brought up Duke and talked a little about Coach K and it being his last season, and he's going to be done after this year, and the phenomenal career that he has had. How, as a coach, do you convince your kids this is not additional pressure for you? This is an opportunity for you, because I could totally see kids when we get to the tournament kind of going, we're feeling weighed down because we feel like we have to win for him. How do you kind of spin that to your group of, hey, let's go out and play. You have a great opportunity, but there's not extra pressure. Don't feel that way.
Yeah. No, I think it takes great leadership from the coaching staff and from Coach K himself to work that psychological magic where you really get the kids to relax and just simply go play, and to play for each other, not to play for him. And I know he does a great job of that year in and year out. I think his job has become much more difficult because really he only has his kids for about 3 or 4 months, and then they're off to the NBA. And that's probably one of the major reasons he is giving it up. You know, I think he's seen his fair share of the one and done scenario, and probably has taken a lot of the joy and passion away from him, because you've got to get to know your kids and maybe even start with a new group. But I think that will be a factor. Could be something that, hopefully the type of kids that they recruit are such thoroughbreds and at the top of the food chain as far as athletes are concerned in basketball, where they're just, they're wired a certain way where, that pressure and the thoughts of letting somebody else down probably doesn't enter their mind as much as, hey, I want this for myself, my teammates, and we're going to go and get this done. And they like that type of pressure, they thrive on it. And I think that's kind of what they're counting on happening in Duke. And we're going to find out. That's going to be a great storyline as we follow them through the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they respond. If they come through and they win it all, we're going to hear, hey, we won it all for Coach. And if they don't, I promise you, there are going to be people out there that are going to actually blame Coach K. Well, you shouldn't have put that on the kids. It could go that direction too. Coach, speaking of the coaching changes that we've seen in college hoops, and this is something I really wanted to get your thoughts on. It's not a coincidence that so many good coaches are on their way out. Some of it is era. Some of it is, I believe, they're tired of dealing with it. Roy Williams leaves North Carolina, gives it up. Hey, Roy's a lifer. We know that. That had to be really, really tough for him. Lon Kruger giving up, another guy that his whole life was college hoops. We now see Mark Turgeon is stepping down at Maryland. Danny Manning's going to take over there. I don't think it's a coincidence. Mike Krzyzewski is done after this season. Coach, these jobs are so much more now with that open transfer rule. Coach, you and I know firsthand what open transfer does. We saw it in the state of Colorado. The fact that you basically have to be recruiting 24/7, 365, there's never an end to it. The kid that you finally got can leave tomorrow. I don't think we're teaching kids the right principles when we have that open rule, are we? We live this. We know how this ends.
Yeah, we've been down that road many times. And I was the victim of losing some great kids. And I was also the beneficiary. So I have seen both sides of it. And again, as I finished up my career, moved on, and as these other really great coaches who are really so talented and good at what they do, move on. And I think you're seeing that in every aspect of our society, Dale. So I don't think there's any business entity or facet of the world where you just see people that we've lost our way with, the integrity, the ethics of what is the proper thing to do as a parent, as an athlete, respect, loyalty, thinking about others before you think about yourself. All those really valuable lessons that we've taught all these years. Now we've gone from it's a we thing to it's a me thing. Everything's me, 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 I, and not we and us. And if you really step back and think about it, kind of as a gut punch, it kind of takes some of the spirit out of you because we've just become so selfish as a nation, maybe as a world, where everybody's just out looking for themselves and it's not about team aspect and teamwork and doing what's best for your teammate before you do your own thing. So yeah, it's very individualized. And, I think Mark Turgeon, I think that's a great example that you brought up, Coach, is, there's a guy that has been a gym rat. I remember him back in college. And he was Tad Boyle's mentor. And I've talked to Tad many times about Coach Turgeon and what he was all about, and how much he loved the game and how much it meant to him, and a great overachiever, six foot white kid out of a little bitty Kansas, and going and having a successful run at Kansas, both as a player and now as a coach. It's really kind of sad. And maybe you don't want to be the old grouchy get off my lawn guy, but you just see a lot of things that are happening in collegiate athletics where you're just thinking, wow, this has just really gotten away from us. And it's nothing like it used to be. And will it ever be that way again? Probably not. And it's kind of sad to see how it's transformed in that manner.
Yeah, it is. And I see so many good guys that I know we say, hey, the era is ending and it's changing. And I get that. But when you're losing that many good people, you're going to feel it. And I guess what I worry about is what that kind of next level of coach is going, what's that next era coach going to look like? Because I have a feeling, I think it's going to be that AAU coach that goes out and just recruits every day and all day. And that's just kind of what he does. Coach, you and I know dealing with those kind of coaches, don't get me wrong, there's some good ones. And there's a lot of really, really sleazy, greasy ones that you don't want your kid anywhere near. And that's what I'm worried about. That's what's coming, isn't it?
I think you're right. And, if you have the opportunity or you're lucky enough to know some people in the inner circle of collegiate athletics, known, and I do, I talk to the staff at CU every once in a while and stay in touch with them. And and you talk to Mike Rohn, the top assistant, or even the Tad, you know, they're pretty, and I don't think they'd mind me saying it, but they're pretty open and honest about some of the things that go on at the collegiate level that would make your head spin or make you want to vomit. And, you know, they talk a lot about Sean Miller of Arizona and a lot of the, you know, unethical things that were going on there for him to get kids to go to Arizona. And, I've heard, and again, and we've talked about this too, my gut feeling on Bill Self in Kansas and some of the things that go on there for them to get the type of kids that, you know, who would go to Lawrence, Kansas, unless there were some things that were going on there that maybe allow them to Lawrence, Kansas and be pretty comfortable there that aren't ethical. I think some of that's going on. So I think you're probably going to, everybody's willing to sell their soul to the devil to win. And boy, you know, it's fun while it lasts, but karma usually catches up with everybody in some fashion, just like it did with Sean Miller. You know, you better enjoy it while it lasts because it's not going to last forever. It can't.
No, you're right. And that concerns me a great deal because the thing that people forget a lot of times, they sit there and they say, well, this is just what you have to do with these kids. Kids don't change. Kids are kids. It's the difference of adults being adults. And right now I'm getting really, really concerned that the adults have changed their standards so much. They're now being kids instead of being the adults. And that's never a good sign. You don't want to go down that path. Sure. Like you said, as a society or in the coaching ranks, coach, we are not going to leave on a negative subject though, because that's just not how we're going to roll. What I want to know is this: you are now free. You don't have to be at any games you don't want to be. College basketball is here. High school basketball is here. We already talked about it a little bit. You're going and you're seeing some games. You're traveling around and doing the world tour here. Where are the games that you would like to go see? What colleges or what I guess arenas even? Where would you like to go see games at? That, because you've always been coaching, you've always been busy, this time of year you haven't been able to. Where is it you want to go see some games?
It's interesting that you bring that up. Actually, I have a younger brother, great young brother of mine, who is a great basketball player. He lives just about 5 miles from the Duke campus. And we were just talking a couple of days ago, we're going to try and get together this basketball season at Duke. So we're going to go to the Duke game. And I've had a couple of chances to go to Duke to watch games, but something always came up or fell through. So I have not been on. I've been to Cameron Arena and toured it, but I haven't seen a live game there. So definitely going to do that. And heck, while I'm down there, what the heck, I might as well go to Chapel Hill and head to them there and make a big weekend out of it. Maybe even go to NC State, down to Wake Forest, and you know some of the true basketball communities that have been around and have great traditions that have been around for a long time. So again, I'm going to explore the East Coast and kind of Georgia. The University of Georgia doesn't have a great program, so I don't have to worry about that. But the College of Charleston is a great basketball school, and they're down the road just 2 hours from me. So I'm going to try and catch a College of Charleston game and go through North Carolina and pick up some of those games. And then we'll kind of see where else that might lead me. I'll find some things to attend. I guarantee you that. I've been to a couple of high school games here, and I've seen a couple of high school teams in our area here in Savannah that have been very impressive. So I'll be following them as well, and maybe make it to the Georgia State to high school championships and kind of see how that looks compared to what we do in Colorado. And, you know, just do some things like that just to keep my pulse on what's going on.
Coach, your world tour sounds very, very appealing. It makes me want to do that when I grow up someday. And
coming up, you're always welcome. I would enjoy spending some time with you, Coach.
Coach, that sounds like a lot of fun. And anytime you come on, I'd love to just get your thoughts on what's going on in the world of sports. And it's always fun to catch up with you and see how things are going. Hopefully we see some improvements in some of the things we talked about. Hopefully our Broncos can figure some things out. Hopefully March Madness ends up being fun. I will say this though: how great is it to see fans back in the stands, kids getting to play, participation is back. I absolutely love seeing that now.
Yeah, no, it's, You're right. What a great way to end our conversation. Just thinking about full arenas with kids going crazy and people having fun and the way it should be and will be. If you can't get enjoyment and excitement out of that, there's something wrong with it, because it's great to see it back.
Could not agree more. Coach, thank you so much for stopping by the Dose. You know you are always welcome. Hey, now you got to be our SEC correspondent there. You're down in the heart. We got to get some information from you, so you're going to have to stop by again.
Hey, I'd love to. And yeah, that's a deal. Let's do it again soon. I really enjoy it. I appreciate
the opportunity. Sounds great. We definitely will. Hey, Coach, have a happy holidays, and thanks so much.
You too, Coach. Take care.
Hey, next week on the Dose, we are going to have something extra special for you. You're going to have to trust me on that, but I promise you it will be worth it for you to stop by and check out the Dose. Plus, you know we'll be keeping you up with all that is going on in the world of sports as only we can. So be sure to stop by. Be sure to let a friend know to do the same. Our numbers keep going up each week, and that is always a very, very encouraging thing. Hey, I want to say thank you to Russ McKinstry for stopping by and talking sports with us. We always enjoy your visits. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing wherever it is you watch or listen. Thank you for checking out the new stuff going on over at DailyDoseSports.com. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the podcast, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
I've had it with this dump. We got no food. We got no jobs. Our pets' heads are falling off.